turn with me, if you will, to, in this case, the about the third Torah portion in the book of Devarim, or Deuteronomy, chapter 7. And we start in about verse 12, where it says, "And it shall come to pass." And that word literally is, it means heal. Ekev in the Hebrew, but the idea seems to be, the root of the word seems to be that the heel is the first thing when you walk forward that touches the ground. So that's where the idea of it comes to pass. Heel and toe, heel and toe. It shall come to pass, Ekev in the Hebrew, or because is another way to put it. Because you hearken to these ordinances and keep them and do them. Let's see here. Ordinances. Oh, yeah. Same word we always see. One of the three, anyway. Mishpatim. Ordinances, plural. And, of course, the continuing theme here is one that we've seen before. We're going to keep seeing because it's central to the Torah. And it's the idea of my commandments, my statutes, my judgments, my ordinances. Keep them and do them. And Yahuwah your El then shall keep with you the covenant and the mercy which he swore to your fathers. And he will love you. That root word there, of course, everybody's probably heard this one, is Ahav. And bless you and multiply you. He'll also bless the fruit of your body and of your land, your corn, your wine, your oil, the increase of your cattle and your young and your flock, all the things in the land that he swore unto your fathers to give you. And then it goes on to give us some of the blessings. These blessings, too, are going to be repeated several times in this book in particular, but certainly within the Torah. You'll be blessed above all peoples. There will not be a male or female barren among you or even among your cattle. And Yahuwah will take away from you all sickness. And he'll put none of the nasty diseases of Mitzrayim upon you. And you know them well, basically, it says. But he will, in fact, lay them instead upon all of those that hate you. And you will consume the peoples that Yahuwah will deliver unto you. Now, here's another repeated theme. Your eye is not to pity them, nor shall you serve their gods. Over and over and over again, one of the other central themes in here is no idolatry. Understand what idolatry is, putting other gods before him. That would be a snare unto you. And if you ask yourself in your heart, look, these nations are more than I. How can we possibly do this, dispossess them? It says, you shall not be afraid of them. You will well remember what Yahuwah your El did unto Pharaoh, and indeed unto all of Mitzrayim. All of the things your eyes saw, the great trials, the signs, the wonders, the mighty hand, the outstretched arm, whereby Yahuwah your El brought you out. And so shall Yahuwah Eloheka do to all of the peoples of whom you are afraid. Moreover, he's going to send the hornet among them until they are left, and they that hide themselves perish from before you. Don't be frightened of them, for Yahuwah Eloheka is in the midst of you. A God great and powerful and awful, actually, is I think the literal word here. And Yahuwah will cast out those nations before you little by little. And the point here is, it's not going to be real fast, lest the beast of the field increase upon you. So part of the understanding, and by the way, as an engineer, this speaks to me, when you get something that happens real rapidly, you get a transient effect, right? You know, if you just take and plop a great big baseball or a rock into the water, you get the plop. But if you take that same rock and put it in gradually, the water covers it over, and it's not such a big plop. So that's essentially what we're talking about here. He's going to do this little by little so that the transition is not two out of hand, and that the beasts don't then multiply and come upon them. But Yahuwah, it says, will in fact deliver them up before you, discomfit them until they are destroyed. He'll deliver their kings into your hand too. You'll make their name literally to perish from under Hashemayim, and there won't be any man able to stand against you until you have destroyed them. Now here is another one of these references, not only to idolatry, but to the specifics of how we are to deal with it. And I will contend, by the way, that his disgust and his anger with the idolatry of this time and people is no less than it's always been. The graven images of their so-called gods, and by the way, just says they're Elohim, they're mighty ones, you shall burn with fire. Don't even covet the silver or gold that's on them, nor take it unto you, lest you be snared therein. It is an abomination unto Yahuwah your El. Now here I'm going to pause, and I'm going to point out here at the end of chapter 7, this is another one of these places that I suggest to folks that when the subject of idolatry comes up, and when you're dealing with, I keep using this terminology because it's ever more appropriate, the whore church. So many things that people just don't understand that he hates. And why? And you'll hear things like, oh, you know, he knows my heart. God knows my heart. He doesn't mind if I do a little paganism, just mix a little bit of stuff that he hates in here with the stuff that supposedly is for his worship. Well, whenever those kind of comments come up and people just don't understand it, I would suggest memorize these two verses, or at least be able to find them. And again, it's real easy. Deuteronomy chapter 7. 7 is one of those numbers of completion. And here's the end of chapter 7. So that's the memory aid. Look at the end of chapter 7, couple of verses. And to my mind, I remember the first time I read it with real comprehension. You know, you might say your eyes were opened. And I read this and I thought, what? That's pretty dramatic. Okay, let me start the whole sequence and read it again. You're going to do some nasty stuff to their so-called gods. Burn their graven images with fire. And furthermore says, listen to this, don't even covet the silver or gold that's on them, nor take it unto you, because it's a snare. It is an abomination. There's that word, toiba. Nasty. That's the strongest word of condemnation that you can find in the Hebrew. It's an abomination unto Yahuwah. But wait. Here's the line that really, really ought to get to us. Don't even bring that abomination into your house and be accursed like it. You shall utterly detest it and utterly abhor it, for it is something which is called cherem, devoted. It's literally devoted to the wrong thing. That, too, is another very strong word. Okay, so here's the point. All right, oh, he doesn't mind if I have a little bit of paganism. I'll bring in those little bunnies and eggs. Hey, they were on sale, right, after Ishtar Sun God Day. Or he doesn't mind if I have, this little pagan goddess that I got. It's kind of cute and all that. It says don't even bring it into your house, lest you be accursed like it. Utterly detest it, utterly abhor it. I always want to read that and think, okay, any questions? I really have I have difficulty believing that anyone could honestly read this and say, he likes for me to have this crap in my house and doesn't see that there's a problem with it. All right, well, you know the next line, of course. They'll say, oh, well, you know, all that was nailed to the cross. Yeah, sure. He says otherwise. So who are you going to believe, right? Him or your lying eyes? Or, in fact, your eyes, which can read Scripture and tell you, we've been lied to for a long time. Inherited a lot of lies. All right, on to chapter 8. Oh, here's another tough one. All of ha-mitzvah, all of the commandment which I command you this day, shall you observe to do, so that you might live and multiply and go in and possess a land which Yahuwah swore unto your fathers. Now, here we remember, of course, that they did and they didn't. They went into the land and they failed to do what they were commanded to do, ultimately. Took a while, generations, in fact, but ultimately both kingdoms, northern and southern, of course, were cast out and exiled, and here we are still scattered and in exile to this day. And yet, I think it's really instructive to remember, as we're in exile, hoping someday to be regathered, why? Remember, you shall remember all the way which Yahuwah Eloheka has led you these 40 years in the wilderness, that he might afflict you to test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you'd keep his commandments or not. And I guess the answer is he found out. He afflicted you, allowed you to hunger, fed you with manna, which you didn't know, nor your fathers, and he might by this make you to know something. Now, here is another one of these verses. It's all done away with, right? Wrong. It, too, gets quoted in multiple of the Gospels. Matthew, as a matter of fact, here's an interesting one. Matthew 4:4 and Luke 4:4. Man does not live by bread alone, but by everything, every word. That's the same word in Hebrew, dabar, that proceeds out of the mouth of Yahuwah, is how man lives. And remember, he goes on to say, look, you know, your clothing, it didn't get old. Your foot didn't swell up. 40 years. None of that happened. And you will know. yada, right? Yada, yada, yada. No, 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 in your heart, that as a man chastens his son, so Yahuwah, your El, chastens you. This is part of this understanding of love. Now, one other theme that I guess I want to point out in here is there's a lot in this chapter, and certainly in Deuteronomy, that has to do with love. It's probably the place in the Torah where we see this reference more than anywhere else. But it's interesting that, no, love is not what, you know, gets licensed by the whoring Supreme Court so that a man can go alive as with a man as with a woman. That's got nothing to do with it. I think part of the problem is that as a society, we don't even have a clue what the real roots of these words are. But I'm going to suggest to you that there is a real thread that runs through here. As a man chastens his son, is it possible that if a man loves his son, he might chasten him? Well, absolutely. Is it possible that if a son wants to demonstrate his love for his father, that telling him, oh, I love you, or even claiming that he feels something, some emotion, is not as appropriate a way of showing it to the father as obedience, especially if he's been chastened? In other words, I think what I'm trying to suggest is there is an element of obedience to the Father's word here that is completely missing from the modern concept of what it means to love. I like to say it this way. Love is not a feeling. Love is a verb. And it's an action verb. It's a doing verb. And it contains this concept of obedience. Now, I saw one other interesting midrash this week. Not for the first time. It's something that has come up frequently. Has to do with this word, which is Shema. We talk about it every week. We quote Shema Israel, Yahuwah Eloheinu, Yahuwah Echad. Hear, hearken, hear and obey, right? The trouble is, the Hebrew scholars will say, you know what, really? There are a number of English words we try to translate Shema, Shamar, into. Right? Depends on how you conjugate it. That's why it's a little confusing. But to hear and obey, hearken, guard, keep, do. Well, you know, none of those really quite get it. And there is no word, no literal verb in the Hebrew to say obey. Which is interesting. The Midrash pointed out they had to take a word from Aramaic and essentially add it to modern Hebrew to translate the word obey into. So Shema doesn't quite translate, and they don't really have a word that means obey. And here's the point. This is a cultural thing, and I think it goes back with this difference in understanding when it comes to the word love, too. The word obey is literally not needed. If you shamar, it's just understood. It's part of what it means to guard, to keep, to hear. You can't hear, really hear, without obeying. And therein lies the rub. Let me say that again. You cannot really hear, when it comes to things like commandments especially, you cannot really hear without the corresponding understanding of obedience. Don't tell me you heard my commandments if you're not keeping them. And of course, John 14:15, right? If you love me, keep my commandments. Notice there's a lot of overlap in all of these concepts, and this is part of what gets missed. But this Torah portion does a really good job of laying it out in specifics for us. All right. You shall keep the commandments of Yahuwah your El to walk in his ways and to fear him. There's another one of those words. We're supposed to tremble in our boots. Fear, too, is not a feeling any more than love is. It's an action verb. And it's kind of, sort of, very similar. That kind of reverence and respect is a better way of thinking of fear than quaking in your boots. For it says here in verse 7 that Yahuwah your El brings you into a good land. Land of brooks of water, fountains, depths, springing forth in valleys and hills. Land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees, pomegranates, olive trees and honey. Where you shall eat bread, literally in abundance, without scarceness. You won't lack anything. Land that has all kinds of good mineral wealth, stones or iron. You can dig brass out of the hills. And it says you will eat and be satisfied. That sounds like a pretty good promise as well. and bless Yahuwah your El for the good land which he has given you. A lot of us remember a very similar verse that says, after you're eaten and you're satisfied, then you bless Yahuwah for the good land he has given you. Verse 11, however, to my mind, is one of the most interesting and probably, well, in a way, yeah, here's another way to look at fear, a fearful command. Because it's easy if we, well, maybe it's not easy. It should be easy to realize how easy it is for us to fall into this trap if we're not careful. Beware, it says, lest you forget Yahuwah your El and not keep his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes. All these three things, hukim, mishpatim, mitzvot, which I command you this day. When you have eaten and are satisfied, and you've built these nice houses to live in, and when your herds and your flocks are all looking good and everything is right with the world, your silver and your gold is multiplied, everything that you have is multiplied. And then your heart might be lifted up, and you forget Yahuwah your El, who brought you forth out of bondage, out of Mitzrayim, and led you through the wilderness. Remember, there was all kinds of things there, right? He reminds us the serpents, the fiery serpents, the Nakshim, the scorpions, a thirsty ground with no water, and he brought you water out of that rock. He fed you in the wilderness with manna, things your fathers didn't know, and so forth, so that he might test you, and in the end, do you good. Well, you might forget all of that and basically say in your heart, and here it comes, listen carefully, my power and the might of my hand has gotten me this wealth. Remember the famous line from the last dictator in the White House? You didn't build that. We built that for you. No, it's not Big Brother either. That's the point. And I think essentially the guard against element here is, you didn't build it. You worked at it. You had a hand in it. It's not like the socialists are trying to tell you that, no, it's not yours, that Big Brother gave it to you. But for crying out loud, let's remember what really matters, okay? Yeah, you worked hard. Great. But the real blessings come from the Creator. Don't forget Him. And for crying out loud, I think this is a, you know, this warning ought to be in great big flashing red neon letters in our Bibles. My power, don't say it. My power, the might of my hand have gotten me all this wealth. But instead, you're to remember that Yahuwah your El, it's He that gave you the power to get the wealth, that He might establish His covenant that He swore to your fathers, as it is this day. And it will be, here comes the other side of the coin, if you forget Yahuwah your El, and if you walk after those other gods and serve and worship them, I warn you, you will surely perish. Just as the nations that were made to perish before you, so will you perish, because you would not hearken unto the voice of Yahuwah. Chapter 9. Starts out with a familiar set of words, Shema Yisrael. You're to pass over the Jordan this day. Go in and dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourself. All kinds of wonderful cities, fortified cities, great big folks, the Anakim that you know. And you've already heard this, right? Who can stand before the sons of Anak? Well, know this, that it's Yahuwah who goes before you. Isn't it interesting? We just talked about, don't be lured into the trap of saying, my power and my might's got me all this great wealth. Now, you're going to go up against these powerful dudes, and don't be afraid. Who can stand before Anak? Remember, it's Yahuwah. Same one that gave you the power to get the wealth is going to give you the power to get the land. He goes before you to destroy them. He'll bring them down. You'll drive them out. Make them perish quickly, as Yahuwah has spoken to you. And for crying out loud, don't say in your heart, after Yahuwah has thrust him out from before you, here's a similar, a corollary, kind of the one we just heard. It's my righteousness this time that Yahuwah has brought me in to possess this land. Because it's not. It's the wickedness of these nations that Yahuwah has driven them out from before you. Not for your righteousness or your so-called upright heart do you go in to possess this land, but because of the wickedness of these nations that Yahuwah drives them out from before you. What's the problem with them, right? They got all these fake gods and arguably other things, but we know that for sure. that he might establish the word which he swore unto your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. So know, therefore, it's not for your righteousness. And one more comment. Righteousness, of course, the root word there is zadik, or, well, variations on that three-letter sheresh, zadik. The zadik is the name, the verb, and the noun. You can make different forms out of that same root word. And, of course, it's also got to do with Torah obedience and study. So a zadikim is one who studies Torah and is righteous if he walks it and so forth. Same root. Okay, so but it's not for your righteousness, however, that root word that Yahuwah, your El, is giving you this good land. You all are still a stiff-necked people. Remember, don't forget that you made Yahuwah pretty darned angry out there in the wilderness. The day you came forth, up until you got here. It's been going on for four decades. You've been rebellious against Yahuwah. At Horeb, you made him pretty angry, and Yahuwah was angry with you to the point of destroying you. Moshe, at this point, remember, Moshe is the one telling the story. He says, when I was gone up out of the mountain to get those tables of stone, the ones that Yahuwah made, I was up there 40 days, 40 nights, didn't drink, didn't eat, and Yahuwah delivered unto me those two tablets of stone written with the very finger of Elohim. On them was written according to all of the words that he spoke with you in the mount out of the fire on that day. And it came to pass at the end of those 40 days and 40 nights, Yahuwah gave me those two tablets of stone of the covenant. And he said, look here, head on down, get on down there fast. Because the people that you have brought forth out of Egypt have gone and done corruptly. They're turning aside. They're turning aside rapidly from the way I commanded them. They have made themselves this molten image. Masecha. Furthermore, Yahuwah spoke to me and he said, I've seen this people. They are indeed a stiff-necked people. So leave me alone that I may destroy them, blot out their name from under heaven. And he told Moshe, I'm going to build a new nation out of you. So it says, Moshe came, turned down from the mount, which burned with fire, had those two tablets in his hands, and looked, he said, and behold, there you were, doing it, the dirty deed, sinning against Yahuwah. You'd made that molten calf and doing a whole lot of other things too, as it turns out. You turned aside quickly from the way you'd been commanded. So I took hold of those two tables, and I cast them out of my hands and literally smashed them on the ground before your eyes. And I fell down before Yahuwah, as at the first. Back up the mountain. 40 more days, 40 more nights, no food or water because of your sin that you'd sinned. You know, as I read through this, every time I read this, you got to picture it from Moshe's standpoint, all right? I'm up there 40 days, 40 nights. Presumably, at the end of that time, maybe he's a bit thirsty and hungry. Heading down the mountain. And what happens? Oh, for crying out loud, look what they're doing. Smash the tablets right back on up again. You figure he's probably more than a bit disgusted at this point, right? Because of your sin, which you sinned. It kind of helps to bring that line home, doesn't it? In doing that which was evil in the sight of Yahuwah to provoke him. And you know what? He says, I was in dread of the anger and the really, really hot displeasure because Yahuwah was so wroth with you, he was fixing to destroy you. But he hearkened unto me that time also. There's that same word, Shema. And moreover, Yahuwah was really pretty, he was peeved, to put it mildly, with Aaron. Ready to kill him too. And I prayed for Aaron at the same time. So I took your sin, the calf that you'd made, and I burned it with fire, beat it into little pieces, grinding it literally into powder, very small, till it was as fine as dust, and I cast that dust into the brook that descended out of the mountain. Now here's the reference, of course, I believe, to the cup that we see appearing in Scripture. The cup that's described as the remedy for the jealous husband. How do you know? And, of course, it seems that this first instance of that may, again, Scripture doesn't say it explicitly, but what it does tell us, back when we saw the first repetition of this incident, the sons of Levi come up, and they know what to look for somehow. So it may be that action, this process that Moshe went to had a lot to do with that. Again, that's a bit of speculation on my part, but I think it's informed speculation that's very much supported, at least by what Scripture says. All right, there at Tabara and Massah and at Kibrot Hata'ava, you made him angry, wroth. And the picture here is the root word with nostrils flaring, right? Like the old cartoons with the bull. That's wroth. And when Yahuwah sent you out from Kadesh Barnea, he said, go up and possess the land which I gave you. You still rebelled against the commandment of Yahuwah. You didn't believe him. You did not shamar. You didn't hearken. And you know what, guys? He says, you've been rebellious against Yahuwah from the day I first knew you. So, he repeats it again. I fell down before Yahuwah. 40 days, 40 nights I fell down because he said he was going to destroy you. And I prayed to Yahuwah and I said, look, O Yahuwah, Elohi, destroy not thy people and your inheritance, because you've redeemed them through your greatness. You've brought forth out of Mitzrayim with a mighty hand. And remember your servants. By the way, as I go through this, I want to make kind of another observation that I think we see over and over again in Scripture. When it comes to praying, particularly intercessory prayer, the theme that is consistently repeated is remind the Creator of His promises. Not that He has not forgotten them. I don't like that word. Zakar is usually the root word that's used to remembrance, but it's really the call to remembrance. In other words, it's not just that He remembers, but that you remember and you're counting on Him keeping His promises. So that's, I think, the informative way that you can look and see what Moshe is doing here. Remember your servants, he says, Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov. Look not to the stubbornness of this people, not to their wickedness nor their sin, because, remember, it's the land that you brought us out. And the folks therein might say, he wasn't able to do it. He promised it to him, he didn't do it, because he hated them. He brought them out to slay them here in the wilderness. Well, they are your people and your inheritance. So he is reminding El not only of his promises, but of all of the elements that are playing out in the story. That's literally the crux of the Exodus in Yahuwah. And you brought them out by your great power and outstretched arm. So at that time, Yahuwah says to me, all right, go get your two more tablets of stone just like the first. Come up into the mountain and make an ark out of wood. And I will write on those tablets again the Deborim that were on the first tables that you broke. And you put them in the ark. So says Moshe, I made that ark out of acacia wood. I made two more tables of stone just like the first ones. I went up on the mount, had the tablets of stone in my hand, and again he wrote on them, just like the first time, the 10 Deborim, which Yahuwah spoke to you in the mountain, out of the midst of fire, Mount Hor. Sinai at this point. Out of the midst of the fire. Har Sinai. That's what I was looking for. Not Hor. Har Sinai. And Yahuwah gave those things to me. And I turned and I came down from the mountain. He says, I put the tablets into the ark that I had made. Here they are. As Yahuwah commanded. And then the children of Israel journeyed from Beerot, Bene Yachan, to Moserah. And that's where Aaron died. And there he was buried. And now we got Eleazar, his son, now the high priest, in his stead. And from there, y'all journeyed unto Gudgod. And from Gudgod to Yotbah, land of brooks and water. And that's when Yahuwah separated the tribe of Levi to bear the ark of the covenant of Yahuwah, stand before him and minister unto him and bless his name, just as it still is. And remember, he says, Levi does not have any portion or inheritance with you all, with his brethren. Yahuwah is his inheritance, just as was spoken unto him. Now Moshe continues the story, and he says, now I stayed in that mount just like I did the first time, 40 days, 40 nights, and Yahuwah hearkened unto me this time too, and he would not destroy you. And then he said to me, arise, go before the people, cause them to set forward, that they may go in and possess the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. And now here we pause again, because here is a verse that is key. And as I read this, I'm thinking of, not just John 14:15 that I've already mentioned, if you love me, keep my commandments, but also kind of the end of the book of Ecclesiastes. Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. What is the duty of man? Fear God and keep his commandments. That's the whole thing. All right, verse 12 says it this way. And now, Israel, what does Yahuwah your El require of you? But to fear Yahuwah Eloheka, to walk in all of his ways and to love him. And to serve Yahuwah your Eloheka with all your heart and with all your soul. To keep for your own good the commandments of Yahuwah and his statutes, which I command you this day. Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. It's the same thing. fear him, walk in his ways, love him. You know what? If that sounds redundant, it's not. It's in fact conclusive and complete. Picture, a circle being filled out as all of the elements are put in place. Fear him, walk in his ways, and love him. And what does it mean? Well, to serve Yahuwah with all your heart and with all your soul. It is a really, really complete picture right there in that single verse. And it's for your own good. Behold, it says in verse 14, unto Yahuwah your El belong the Hashemayim and the heaven of heavens and Haaretz with all that's therein. And it's because Yahuwah had delight in your fathers to love them, and he chose their seed after them, even you above all peoples as it is this day. So, what does that mean? Circumcise the foreskin of your heart. Quit being stiff-necked. For Yahuwah your El, he is the Elohim of Elohim, Lord of lords, the great God, the mighty, the awful, who regards not persons nor takes reward. He does, however, execute justice for the fatherless and the widow. And he loves the stranger. He gives him food and clothing. So you too, love the stranger. Remember, you guys were strangers in the land of Mitzrayim. And here's another repetition. Very similar. Again, completing the picture. And you shall fear Yahuwah your Elohim, your Yahuwah Eloheka in this case. Him you shall serve, and to him you shall cleave, and by his name you shall swear. He is your glory. He's your El that's done these things, these great and tremendous things for you, and your eyes have even seen them. Now remember, not everybody that was there had actually seen them with their own eyes. In some cases, we're seeing them like they're seeing them, through their father's eyes or our father's 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 eyes. If they weren't physically alive, some of them may have been very young and seen them. Others weren't born until later. But nevertheless, I think it's fair to say your eyes have seen them. Here you are in the wilderness. Even if you didn't see or don't remember some of these things, you know. Fathers went down to Egypt with 70 persons, 70 folks. And now Yahuwah has made you like the stars of heaven in multitude. So therefore, what? Here it is again. You shall love Yahuwah your El. Keep his charge, his statutes, his ordinances, and his commandments always. You notice that? This is one of those things that I emphasize because I think Scripture emphasizes it. We hear this, one of the biggest lies in all of human history, right? You can be like God, you won't die. That's number one and two. And the third one, the law is done away with. He can't keep his word. He nailed it to the cross. What does this say? You love Yahuwah to keep his charge. Now notice that in this set of instructions here, it's often called Ha Commandment, the commandment, right? Shema Israel. But it includes his statutes, his ordinances, and his commandments, and we're to keep them what? Ha Olam. And actually, Ha Amim, all of the days. And know this on this day. Because remember, says Moshe, and this is also really key. It's not with your children that you have not known and that have not seen the chastisement of Yahuwah, his greatness, his mighty hand, his outstretched arm, his signs, his works that he did in the midst of Egypt, of Pharaoh. I am speaking, he says, not with your children that haven't known. Huh? He is speaking to us. He's speaking to those people then, and he is still speaking to us. We see this reference with some other lines in this same book, too. Not just you, we're told elsewhere, but it's those who are gathered here and those who are not gathered here, those who will see, if you will, as we've just talked about, through the eyes of those who are here today and through the words that are preserved and kept, his statutes, his judgments and commandments, his signs, his works, all the things he did. What he did to the army of Mitzrayim, to their horses, their chariots, how he made the Red Sea overflow as they pursued after you, how he destroyed them unto this day. What he did to you in the wilderness till you got here where you are. What he did to Dathan and Abiram, sons of Eliab, son of Reuben, how the earth opened up, swallowed them up, along with everything they had. Your eyes have seen the great work of Yahuwah which he did. Again, your eyes have seen. But in a lot of respects, some of this happened before they were born or before they remembered. Your eyes have still seen. Our eyes have seen, if we have eyes to see. Therefore, guess what? You shall keep all of the commandment, kol ha-mitzvah, singular, which I command you this day, that you may be strong, go in and possess the land that you go over to get. And you may prolong your days upon the land which Yahuwah swore to your fathers to give them and to their seed, right? A land flowing with milk and honey. Because the land that you go in to possess, it's not like Mitzrayim that you came out of, where you had to sow your seed and water with your foot. But the land that you go get is a land of hills and valleys, that drinks water as the rain of heaven comes down, a land that Yahuwah cares for. For the eyes of Yahuwah are always upon it, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. And it will come to pass. How many times are we going to have to hear this? Well, answer, I guess, until we get it. Over and over, he makes this point. And you know, it almost makes me want to cry, I guess, to a certain extent, right? You want to break down in tears for the sadness and the sorrow of the fact that these promises are so wonderful. The threats are there. The promises, the warnings. And we look back, right? We have eyes to see with 20/20 hindsight. And they fail to do exactly what it says here. And guess what? It's human nature. We're still failing to do it. Look at the world today. It shall come to pass, if you hearken Shema diligently into my commandments, which I command you to this day, to love Yahuwah your El, to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, then I'll give you the rain of your land and its season, former rain, latter rain, that you can gather in your corn and your wine and your oil. I'll give you grass for your cattle. You'll eat and be satisfied. Take heed to yourselves, lest your heart be deceived, and you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them, that the anger of Yahuwah will be kindled against you. And he shuts up the heaven, so there's no rain. The ground won't yield her fruit, and you perish quickly from off the good land that Yahuwah gives you. Therefore, you shall lay up my words in your heart and in your soul. Bind them for a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. Recognize it? This is also a kind of the continuation. It's page 2, if you will, of the Shema that we read every week. Bind them as a sign upon your hand. They shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall teach your children, talking of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down and when you rise up. And you shall write them upon the doorposts of your house and upon your gates. Now, some of you know this because I'll frequently mention it as we read it each and every week during the worship service. You shall write them upon what? Al metzutzah. Actually, it's plural, metzutzot. The doorposts of your house. Everybody knows, at least you've probably heard that little box that a lot of times you'll see on people's front door, especially if they're Orthodox Jewish or whatever. It's called a mezuzah. Little box, and inside there are these verses. All right, now that's one way of reading it, right? Bind them as a sign upon your hand. They'll be as frontlets between your eyes when you go in your house, when you come out of your house. Makes sense, okay? I don't know that that's explicitly what you have to do, but it certainly is a reasonable way to remind us of this particular set of commandments. So, yeah, it's a nice little thing to have. You put it on the front door of your house, and as we go in and go out, it's helpful. Kind of like wearing the tzitzit. It's a reminder of this thing, because what's the warning of this entire parsha? It's so easy to forget, so easy to rationalize and to walk away from it, especially, I guess, when we're not in the land. So write them on the doorposts of your house, upon your gates, that your days may be multiplied along with the days of your children upon the land which Yahuwah swore to your fathers to give them, as the days of the heavens above the earth. For if you will diligently keep all this commandment which I command you to do it, to love Yahuwah your El. Now let's pause. Okay, this word now has come up enough times in this portion, Ahava. And there are variants of it too. And the variants basically make the point. Love is not a feeling. Love is an action. It's a dedication. It's a demonstration of obedience. It's all of these things. And listen to how it's put. The verse even helps to explain in context what that word means here. Diligently keep all this commandment, which I command you, to do it, to love Yahuwah your El, to walk in all of his ways and to cleave unto him. And if you do that, then will Yahuwah drive out all the nations from before you. You'll dispossess greater and mightier nations than you. Every place that the sole of your foot treads upon will be yours. From the wilderness to Lebanon, from the river Euphrates, even unto the sea, meaning the Mediterranean. That's your border. And no man will be able to stand against you, because Yahuwah, your El, shall lay the fear of you and the dread of you upon all the land that you tread upon, just as he has spoken unto you. And that's where this portion ends. And guess what? In the subsequent portions, we're going to see yet more repetition and kind of a new concept next time, too, of a blessing and a curse. But it's two sides of the same coin, obedience as opposed to rebellion. The sign of rebellion, not the sign of obedience. They're opposites. And certainly that's true with love. How can you claim that you love him with all your heart and your soul and walk in rebellion? Oh, I don't have to keep his commandments. It's all done away with. If you talk about not loving him, I guess not believing him has probably got to be right up there close to the top of the list.